Let me tell you about a man who has seen everything. His story is a legend, a tale of epic adventures and incredible feats. Anu, the sky god, granted him unmatched wisdom and knowledge. He discovered the secrets of the world, brought back stories from before the flood, and carved his trials into stone for all to see. This man was Gilgamesh, king of Uruk, a city whose walls and temples gleam like polished copper and stand as a testament to his greatness. Gilgamesh built Uruk's walls himself, the likes of which no one has ever equaled. He raised the sacred Iana temple, the holy sanctuary of the goddess Ishtar. Inspect the ancient stone threshold, the work of master craftsmen, the foundation laid by the seven sages. Walk along the wall, marvel at its structure, and see the city that stretches for leagues, enclosing palm gardens, lowlands, and the temple. Within a copper tablet box lies the story of Gilgamesh, recorded on a lapis lazuli tablet. It tells how he endured every hardship, ventured to the ends of the earth, and brought back wisdom from beyond the mortal realm. Gilgamesh was no ordinary king. He was supreme over all others, a hero born in Uruk, a wild bull in human form. He led his people from the front and protected them like a mighty net. The son of Lugalbanda and the goddess Rimat Ninsun, he was two-thirds god and one-third human, a perfect blend of divine and mortal. This mighty king opened mountain passes, dug wells, crossed vast seas, and sought the secret of eternal life. He met Utanapishtim, the faraway, who survived the great flood and restored sanctuaries that had been destroyed. Who else can boast such deeds? Who else can say, "I am king"? But for all his strength and wisdom, Gilgamesh was also a man of extremes. He roamed the city of Uruk, unmatched in power, his head held high. There was no rival who could challenge him, no one who could raise a weapon against him. His companions were always alert, but the people of Uruk began to grow anxious. Gilgamesh took the sons from their fathers, leaving families without their young men, and acted with arrogance day and night. The oppressed citizens of Uruk cried out, "Is this our shepherd, bold and wise? But he takes our sons and leaves no girl to her mother, no daughter to her warrior father, no bride to her young groom." The gods heard our complaints and begged Anu, the lord of Uruk, to intervene. Anu listened to their pleas and called out to Aruru, "You created mankind. Now create someone to match Gilgamesh, so Uruk can find peace." Aruru washed her hands, pinched off some clay, and created Enkidu in the wilderness, a man endowed with great strength. His body was covered in hair, and he knew neither people nor civilization. He lived among the animals, eating grass and drinking from the waterhole. One day, a trapper came face to face with Enkidu at the waterhole. The sight of him filled the trapper with fear, and he went home, trembling. He told his father, "Father, there's a mighty man from the mountains, as strong as a meteorite of Anu. He disrupts my traps and fills in my pits. I can't make my rounds in the wilderness." The trapper's father advised, "Go to Uruk and tell Gilgamesh. He will give you the harlot Shamat. She will tame the wild man." The trapper went to Uruk, told Gilgamesh about the wild man, and Gilgamesh said, "Bring Shamat with you. Have her expose herself at the waterhole. When he sees her, he will approach, and his animals will leave him." The trapper and Shamhat journeyed to the waterhole. On the third day, Enkidu came to drink. Shamhat exposed herself, and Enkidu approached. They lay together for 6 days and 7 nights. When Enkidu turned back to his animals, they ran away, sensing he was no longer one of them. Enkidu felt weak but wiser. He sat at Shamhat's feet, listening to her speak. "You are beautiful, like a god," Shamhat said. "Come with me to Uruk, to the holy temple, the residence of Anu and Ishtar, where Gilgamesh rules. He is wise and mighty, but struts like a wild bull." Enkidu agreed, saying, "Take me to Uruk. I will challenge Gilgamesh and change the order of things." Shamhat led Enkidu to Uruk, where people lived in finery and celebrated every day. She told him about Gilgamesh, handsome and mighty, who had dreams about Enkidu even before they met. Gilgamesh told his mother about his dreams. "Mother, I dreamt of stars and a meteorite. I couldn't lift it. The people of Uruk gathered around it, and I loved it as a wife. You made it compete with me." His mother, Rimat Ninsun, interpreted the dream. "A mighty man will come to you, a comrade who will save you. He is as strong as the meteorite of Anu. Your dream is good." Gilgamesh had another dream about an axe at the gate of his chamber. His mother interpreted it similarly, foretelling the coming of a mighty friend. After hearing about Gilgamesh's dreams, Enkidu and Shamhat made love once more. Enkidu sat in front of Shamhat, the harlot who had brought him out of the wild. Shamhat removed her clothing and dressed Enkidu in one of her garments, keeping a piece for herself. She held his hand as a mother would, leading him to the shepherd's hut. The shepherds gathered around, amazed at this stranger. "Look at him! He looks just like Gilgamesh, tall and strong, towering above the wall's battlements. He must be from the mountains. His strength is like the meteorite of Anu." They offered him food and beer, but Enkidu had never eaten bread or drunk beer before. Shamhat said, "Eat the food, Enkidu. This is how we live. Drink the beer. It's the custom of our land." Enkidu ate until he was full and drank 7 jugs of beer. His heart lifted, and he sang with joy. He felt elated, his face glowing. He bathed, rubbed himself with oil, and became like a man. He put on clothes and looked like a warrior. He took up his weapon, chasing lions to protect the shepherds, guarding the herders so they could rest safely. He was a vigilant protector, twice the height of ordinary men. One day, Enkidu noticed a man approaching. He said to Shamhat, "Who is that man? I need to know why he's here." Shamhat called out to the man and approached him. "Young man, where are you rushing to? Why such a hurry?" she asked. The young man replied, "I've been invited to a wedding, as is our custom. The people have chosen a bride. I've prepared a feast for the wedding, and for Gilgamesh, the king of Uruk, the veil is lifted. He will sleep with the bride first, as is decreed by Anu." Enkidu's face turned red with anger at these words. He stormed off, with Shamhat following. Enkidu blocked the way into Uruk, standing firm. The people of Uruk gathered around, marveling at him. "Who is this stranger who stands tall and strong? He must be from the mountains," they whispered. Enkidu blocked the entrance to the bridal chamber, refusing to let Gilgamesh pass. They grappled at the door, fighting fiercely in the streets of Uruk. The doorposts trembled, and the walls shook from their struggle. Eventually, Gilgamesh bent his knees, 1 foot on the ground, his anger subsiding. Enkidu, seeing this, spoke to Gilgamesh, "Your mother bore you Unique, the wild cow of the enclosure, Ninsun. You are destined to be king over the people, your head held high above all others." They looked at each other, and then they embraced, becoming fast friends. Gilgamesh's mother, Rimat Ninsun, spoke to her son, "Enkidu has no father or mother. His hair is long and uncut, born and raised in the wilderness. He has no one to guide him." Enkidu heard her words and sat down, weeping, his strength weakened. The two friends clasped hands, feeling the bond between them. Enkidu declared to Gilgamesh that Enlil had assigned Humbabar to guard the cedar forest, a terror to all. Humbabar's roar is like a flood. His mouth spews fire, and his breath is death. He can hear a rustle 100 leagues away. Who would dare enter his forest? Gilgamesh replied, "Only the gods live forever. As for us mortals, our days are numbered, and our efforts often amount to nothing. You fear death, but I will go first. Do not be afraid. Should I fall, I will have made a name for myself. They will say it was Gilgamesh who fought Humbabar the Terrible." Determined, Gilgamesh said, "I will cut down the cedar. I will make a name that lasts forever. Come, my friend, let's go to the forge and have weapons made." Hand in hand, they went to the craftsmen who discussed among themselves. "We should fashion an axe, a hatchet of great weight, swords and armor fitting for this journey," they said. Gilgamesh addressed the men of Uruk. "Listen to me. I want to make myself mighty and go on a distant journey. I will face battles I've never known and travel roads I've never seen. Bless me. I will celebrate the New Year's festival and devote myself to its ceremonies. The celebrations will echo with shouts of joy." Enkidu then spoke to the elders. "Tell Gilgamesh not to go to the cedar forest. The journey is too dangerous. The guardian of the forest is a terror to all. Who can face him?" The elders of Uruk advised Gilgamesh, "You are young, Gilgamesh. You don't understand what you are saying. Humbabar's roar is like a flood. His mouth spews fire, and his breath is death. He can hear any sound in his forest from 100 leagues away. Who would dare confront him? Enlil made him a terror to protect the cedar." Gilgamesh listened to their counsel, but his resolve remained firm. The elders spoke to Gilgamesh, saying, "Gilgamesh, don't rely solely on your immense strength. Stay sharp, and make sure each strike hits its mark. The one who goes ahead saves his comrade. The one who knows the route protects his friend. Let Enkidu lead the way. He knows the road to the cedar forest and has seen many battles. He will keep you safe. Remember, we have entrusted the king to you, Enkidu. When you return, you must return him safely to us. Gilgamesh turned to Enkidu and said, Come, my friend. Let's go to the Egalma temple to Ninsun, the great queen. Ninsun is wise and all-knowing. She will guide us on the right path. Hand in hand, Gilgamesh and Enkidu walked to the Egalma, the great palace, to Ninsun, the great queen. Gilgamesh approached her. Ninsun, even though I am incredibly strong, I must travel a great distance to face Humbaba. I must fight battles I've never faced and travel roads I do not know. Until I return from the cedar forest, until I kill Humbaba the Terrible and rid the land of what Shamash hates, please intercede with Shamash on my behalf. If I succeed, let the land rejoice, and I will erect a monument of our victory before you. Queen Ninsun listened to her son's words, her heart heavy with grief. She retreated to her quarters, washed with the purity plant, donned a robe befitting her status, adorned herself with jewels, and placed a crown on her head. She sprinkled water from a bowl onto the ground, then went up to the roof. She set incense before Shamash, offered fragrant cuttings, and raised her arms in prayer. Shamash, why have you given my son Gilgamesh a restless heart? Why must he travel to face Humbaba, a journey full of unknown dangers? Until he returns, please watch over him. Let Aja, the bride, remind you to protect him, and command the watchmen of the night, the stars, and your father Sin to guard him. Ninsun completed the ritual and called Enkidu to give him instructions. Enkidu the Mighty, you are not my son by birth, but I now speak to you as one of the sacred votaries of Gilgamesh, alongside the high priestesses, holy women, and temple servants. She placed a pendant around Enkidu's neck as a blessing. I have taken you under my protection, Enkidu. Until you return from the cedar forest, whether it takes a month or a year, you must keep Gilgamesh safe. Enkidu and Gilgamesh then went to the temple of Shamash. Enkidu made an offering, while Gilgamesh stood in the Egalma, deep in thought. The elders reiterated, Enkidu, you will protect your friend and keep him safe. Remember, we have entrusted the king to you, and when you return, you must return him safely to us. Enkidu spoke to Gilgamesh, My friend, let's turn back. The road ahead is fraught with danger. But Gilgamesh pressed on, undeterred. After 20 leagues, they took a break for food. At 30 leagues, they stopped for the night. They walked 50 leagues in a single day, covering what would normally take a month and a half. On the third day, they approached the Lebanon Mountains. They dug a well facing the setting sun, and Gilgamesh climbed a mountain peak. He made an offering of flour and prayed, Mountain, bring me a dream, a favorable message from Shamash. Enkidu set up a sleeping place for Gilgamesh. As a violent wind blew through, he secured a covering and made sure Gilgamesh was comfortable. As Gilgamesh rested his chin on his knees, sleep, that great equalizer of mankind, overtook him. In the middle of the night, Gilgamesh woke up suddenly. He said to his friend, Did you call out to me? Why did I wake up? Did you touch me? Why am I so disturbed? Did a god pass by? Why are my muscles trembling? Enkidu, my friend, I had a dream, and it was deeply disturbing. In the mountain gorges, the mountain fell on us. It was like being caught in a swarm of flies. Enkidu, interpreting the dream, said, My friend, your dream is favorable. The mountain represents Humbaba. It means we will capture him, kill him, and throw his corpse into the wasteland. In the morning, we will receive a favorable message from Shamash. They continued their journey. After 20 leagues, they stopped for food, and after 30 leagues, they stopped for the night. They walked 50 leagues in a single day. Again, they dug a well facing Shamash, and Gilgamesh climbed a mountain peak, made an offering of flour, and prayed for a favorable dream. Enkidu set up a sleeping place, and as the violent wind blew, he secured a covering. While Gilgamesh rested his chin on his knees, sleep overtook him again. In the middle of the night, Gilgamesh woke up. He said, Did you call out to me? Why did I wake up? Did you touch me? Why am I so disturbed? Did a god pass by? Why are my muscles trembling? Enkidu, my friend, I had another dream. This time I was grappling with a wild bull. Its bellow split the ground and raised a cloud of dust to the sky. I sank to my knees before it, and it encircled my arm. My temples throbbed, but it gave me water to drink from its water skin. Enkidu interpreted the dream. My friend, The wild bull you saw is Shamash, our protector. In our struggles, he will hold our hand. The one who gave you water to drink is your personal god, Lugalbanda, who brings you honor. We should join forces and accomplish something never done before in the land. They continued their journey, taking breaks at 20 and 30 leagues, covering 50 leagues in a day. Gilgamesh prayed for a favorable dream once more, and Enkidu set up the sleeping place, securing a covering against the wind. As Gilgamesh slept, he had another dream. In the middle of the night, he woke up and said, "My friend, did you call out to me? Why did I wake up? Did you touch me? Why am I so disturbed? Did a god pass by? Why are my muscles trembling? Enkidu, I had a third dream. The heavens roared, the earth rumbled, and then everything became deathly still. Darkness loomed, lightning cracked, and fire broke out. Then everything turned to ash." Enkidu listened and said, "The dream is favorable, my friend. It means we will achieve victory." They resumed their journey, following the same routine, breaks at 20 and 30 leagues, covering 50 leagues in a day. As usual, Gilgamesh prayed. Enkidu set up the sleeping place, and Gilgamesh had another dream. In the middle of the night, Gilgamesh woke up. "My friend, did you call out to me? Why did I wake up? Did you touch me? Why am I so disturbed? Did a god pass by? Why are my muscles trembling? I had a fourth dream. This time, it was a vision of a giant. Enkidu, what does it mean?" Enkidu replied, "This dream is also favorable. It means we will overcome Humbaba and triumph over him." They continued following their established routine. On the fifth night, Gilgamesh had yet another dream. When he woke, he said, "My friend, I had a fifth dream. It was deeply disturbing. I saw tears falling before Shamash." Shamash heard Gilgamesh's plea, and suddenly there was a warning sound from the sky. "Hurry, so Humbaba does not enter the forest or hide in the thickets. He has not put on his seven coats of armor. He is wearing only one." Gilgamesh and Enkidu lunged at each other like wild bulls ready for the fight. "One alone cannot win. Strangers must help each other. A slippery path is not feared by two who support each other. A three-ply rope is not easily cut. Together we will overcome." Enkidu said, "Once we enter the cedar forest, let's split open the tree and strip off its branches." Gilgamesh replied, "Why should we despair? We have crossed all the mountains together. You, who are so experienced in battle, should not fear death. Let your voice bellow like a drum. Shake off the stiffness in your arms and the paralysis in your legs. Take my hand, and we will go on together. Let your heart burn for battle. Pay no heed to death. Do not lose heart." The careful man watches from the side, but the one who leads protects himself and saves his comrade, establishing fame through their fight. As they reached the evergreen forest, they fell silent and stood still, ready for what lay ahead. They stood at the edge of the forest, gazing up at the towering cedar tree and the entrance to the forest. A well-worn trail marked where Humbaba would walk, leading straight into the heart of the forest. The cedar mountain, home of the gods and the throne of Imani, rose before them. The trees were lush, their shade pleasant, with thorn bushes and thickets intertwined, boxwood among the cedars, and a ravine surrounding the forest for miles. As they ventured deeper, swords drawn, the axes were smeared with resin, daggers and swords ready. Humbaba spoke to Gilgamesh. "Why have you come to me, Gilgamesh? Enlil has made me the guardian here." Enkidu responded, "No one can succeed alone. Even the strongest need help. When two people support each other, they can tackle even the slipperiest path. A rope woven with three strands is much harder to break. Even a mighty lion can be defeated by two determined cubs working together." Humbaba mocked them. "Two fools giving each other advice. Gilgamesh, why are you here? And you, Enkidu, a nobody who doesn't even know his own father, why have you brought Gilgamesh to me? I should feed your flesh to the vultures." Gilgamesh turned to Enkidu. "My friend, Humbaba's face keeps changing." Enkidu replied, "Why are you letting him get to you? Stay strong. Don't back down now. Keep fighting even harder." The ground shook as they fought, the earth splitting beneath their feet. Shamash unleashed mighty winds against Humbaba. South wind, north wind, east wind, west wind, whistling wind, piercing wind, blizzard, bad wind, wind of Simuru, demon wind, ice wind, storm, sandstorm, 13 winds in all. Humbaba was trapped, unable to escape, and Gilgamesh's weapons were within reach. Humbaba begged for his life. "You are young, Gilgamesh. Your mother bore you, and Shamash has sent you. Let me be your servant. I will cut down as many trees as you wish and guard your palace with the finest wood. Enkidu urged Gilgamesh, Do not listen to him, my friend. He is trying to deceive you. Kill him now, before he can appeal to the gods. Humbaba, seeing Gilgamesh hesitate, pleaded with Enkidu. You know the rules of this forest. You should have killed me when you first entered. But now show mercy and speak to Gilgamesh on my behalf. Enkidu was unmoved. Gilgamesh, we must finish this. Kill Humbaba before Enlil hears of this and the gods turn against us. Erect an eternal monument proclaiming how you killed Humbaba. Humbaba cursed them. May Enkidu not outlive Gilgamesh. May he have no more share than his friend. Enkidu, frustrated, said, My friend, you have been listening to Humbaba's curse instead of me. Together, they attacked Humbaba, pulling out his insides, including his tongue. Abundance fell over the mountain as they cut through the cedar trees. While Gilgamesh felled the trees, Enkidu searched the area. Enkidu said, We have cut down the towering cedar that touched the sky. Let's make a door 72 cubits high, 24 cubits wide, and 1 cubit thick, with its fixtures and pivots all from one piece. We will send it down the Euphrates to Nippur, where they will rejoice. They tied the logs together to make a raft. Enkidu steered, while Gilgamesh held the head of Humbaba. Gilgamesh washed his hair and cleaned up his gear. He shook out his long locks, letting them fall down his back. He threw off his dirty clothes and put on clean ones, wrapped himself in regal garments, and fastened his sash. When he placed his crown on his head, Ishtar, the goddess of love and war, captivated by his beauty, approached him. Come, Gilgamesh, she said, be my husband. Grant me your love, and I'll be your wife. I'll harness a chariot of lapis lazuli and gold, with golden wheels and horns of electrum. The storming mules will pull it, and you will ride in splendor. Come into my house fragrant with cedar. Kings, lords, and princes will bow before you. The people of the mountains will bring you tribute. Your goats will bear triplets, your ewes twins. Your donkeys will be stronger than mules, and your horses will be eager to race. Your axe will have no equal. Gilgamesh replied, What could I possibly give you if I married you? Do you need oil or clothes? Do you lack food or drink? I'd gladly feed you like a god and give you wine fit for a king, but you would soon tire of me. You're like an oven that burns its user, a door that doesn't keep out the wind, a palace that crushes its warriors, an elephant that destroys its own shelter, pitch that blackens the bearer's hands, a water skin that leaks, a shoe that bites the wearer's foot. You don't keep your lovers. Tammuz, your first love, you sentenced to endless lamentation. You loved the colourful bird but broke its wing. You loved the lion but dug pits for it. You loved the stallion but condemned it to endless galloping. You loved the shepherd but turned him into a wolf, hunted by his own flock. You loved Ishulanu, your father's gardener, but turned him into a dwarf for rejecting you. And now you want me, you'll treat me the same. Furious, Ishtar went to heaven to complain to her father, Anu, and her mother, Antum. Father, Gilgamesh has insulted me. He's recounted my despicable deeds and cursed me. Anu replied, Didn't you provoke him first? Gilgamesh only spoke the truth. Ishtar demanded, Give me the bull of heaven so I can kill Gilgamesh. If you don't, I'll smash the gates of the netherworld and let the dead outnumber the living. Anu warned her, If I give you the bull of heaven, there will be 7 years of famine. Have you prepared for this? Ishtar insisted, I've stored grain and made grasses grow. The people and animals will survive. Convinced, Anu gave Ishtar the bull of heaven. She led it down to Uruk, where it caused massive destruction. At its first snort, a huge pit opened, swallowing 100 young men. At its second snort, 200 more fell in. At its third snort, Enkidu fell in up to his waist. He managed to climb out and seized the bull by its horns. The bull spit in front of him and flicked its tail, but Enkidu held on. Enkidu called to Gilgamesh, My friend, we must act now. I'll hold the bull, and you strike it. Enkidu grasped the bull's tail and held it tight while Gilgamesh, like an expert butcher, approached and thrust his sword between its horns, killing it. They ripped out its heart and offered it to Shamash. Then they sat down together. Ishtar climbed to the top of the wall of Uruk and cursed Gilgamesh. Woe to Gilgamesh, who insulted me and killed the bull of heaven! Enkidu, hearing this, tore off the bull's hindquarter and threw it at her. If I could reach you, I'd do the same to you. Ishtar gathered the cultic women, joy girls, and harlots to mourn over the bull. Meanwhile, Gilgamesh called the craftsmen to admire the bull's massive horns, each made of 30 minas of lapis lazuli. He offered the oil inside them to his personal god, Lugalbanda, and hung the horns in his palace. After washing their hands in the Euphrates, Gilgamesh and Enkidu walked through the streets of Uruk hand in hand. The people gathered around, staring in awe. Gilgamesh declared, "Who is the bravest of men? Who is the boldest? It is Gilgamesh who killed the bull of heaven." That night, Gilgamesh held a celebration in his palace. The young men of Uruk fell asleep on the couches. Enkidu, too, fell asleep but had a disturbing dream. He woke and shared it with his friend. "Why are the great gods having a council?" Enkidu asked. "In my dream, Anu, Enlil, and Shamash were in a meeting, and Anu said to Enlil, 'Because they killed the bull of heaven and Humbabar, one of them must die.' Enlil replied, 'Let Enkidu die, but Gilgamesh must live.' Shamash argued, 'It was on my orders that they killed the bull of heaven and Humbabar. Should innocent Enkidu die?' Enlil got angry at Shamash, saying, 'You're to blame because you travelled with them daily as their friend.'" Enkidu lay sick in front of Gilgamesh, tears streaming down his face. Gilgamesh, full of grief, said, "Why are they sparing me instead of you, my brother?" Enkidu replied, "So I am to become a ghost, to sit with the dead and never see you again. I didn't kill the cedar in the forest where the great gods dwell." Enkidu turned to Gilgamesh, saying, "Come, my friend." He looked at the door and spoke to it as if it were human. "You stupid wooden door, you can't understand anything. I selected the wood for you from 10 leagues away, chose the best cedar and made you 72 cubits tall, 14 cubits wide, and 1 cubit thick. I fashioned you, carried you to Nippur. Had I known this would be your gratitude, I would have chopped you up for firewood. Yet I carried you all this way, and you repay me like this. May a future king reject you and replace my name with his own." Enkidu tore at the door in frustration. Gilgamesh listened to his words, tears flowing. He said, "Friend, the gods have given you wisdom. Why do you speak such harsh words? The dream is frightening, but it's important. Your words are buzzing like flies, filled with fear and sorrow. I will pray to the great gods and seek their help." As dawn broke, Enkidu raised his head and cried out to Shamash, "I appeal to you, Shamash, for my life. Curse the trapper who brought me from the wild. May he never have enough to eat, may his profits vanish, and may he be destitute." After cursing the trapper, Enkidu's anger turned to the harlot. "You, Shamhat, I curse you. May you never have a home or children. May you live in the shadows, stained by filth. May you be rejected by all, forced to live at the city's edge, where thorns tear at your feet. May both drunkards and sober men strike you, and may owls nest in the cracks of your walls." Shamash heard Enkidu's curses and called out from the sky, "Why do you curse Shamhat, who fed you, clothed you, and introduced you to Gilgamesh, your dear friend? Now Gilgamesh is your brother. He will have you lie on a grand couch and sit in a place of honor. The people of Uruk will mourn you, and Gilgamesh will wander the wilderness in grief, covered in a lion's skin." Hearing Shamash's words, Enkidu's heart calmed. He said to Shamhat, "Come, I will bless you instead. May governors and nobles love you. May men travel far to be with you, and may they give you gifts of gold and jewels." Enkidu lay alone, speaking to his friend. "Listen, Gilgamesh, to the dream I had last night. The heavens cried out and the earth replied. A man with a dark face like an Anzu bird, with lion's paws and eagle's talons, seized me. I struck him, but he overpowered me, trampling me like a wild bull. He encircled me and took me to the House of Darkness, the home of Irkalla. It's a place where those who enter never return, where they sit in darkness, eat clay, and wear feathers like birds. There I saw kings who once ruled the land but now served Anu and Enlil. I saw priests and acolytes, and Ereshkigal, the queen of the underworld, with her scribe Belitseri, reading out names." She raised her head and asked, "Who has brought this man here?" Enkidu lay down and began to weaken. He said, "My friend, I am afraid of death." He lay sick for days, his condition worsening. He cried out to Gilgamesh, "My friend, you encouraged me in battle, but now you have abandoned me. We fought together, and now I must die alone." Gilgamesh stayed by Enkidu's side, mourning for his friend, filled with sorrow as Enkidu's life slipped away. As the first light of dawn crept over the horizon, Gilgamesh spoke to his fallen friend, his voice heavy with sorrow. "Enkidu, your mother was a gazelle, and your father, a wild donkey. Four wild asses raised you, teaching you the ways of the wilderness. May the paths we took to the cedar forest mourn you, never falling silent day or night. May the elders of Uruk grieve for you. May the people who blessed our journey lament your passing. May the men of the mountains and hills cry out in sorrow. May the pastures wail as if you were their child. May the cypress and cedar trees, which we destroyed in our anger, mourn you. May the bear, hyena, panther, tiger, water buffalo, jackal, lion, wild bull, stag, ibex, and all the creatures of the plains mourn you. May the sacred river Ulerja, where we once walked, mourn you. May the pure waters of the Euphrates, where we made offerings, mourn you. May the men of Uruk, who witnessed our battle against the bull of heaven, mourn you. May the farmer, who sings your praises, mourn you. May the craftsman, who exalted your name, mourn you. May the herder, who prepared butter and light beer for you, mourn you. May the perfumer who anointed your back mourn you. May the brewer who made fine beer for you, mourn you. May the harlot who rubbed you with oil and made you feel alive, mourn you. May the wife who placed a ring on your finger mourn you. May the brothers weep for you like sisters. May the lamentation priests shave their heads for you. Enkidu, your parents are in the wastelands, and I mourn you. Hear me, elders of Uruk, hear me, men of Uruk. I mourn for my friend Enkidu, and I cry out in anguish. You, my axe at my side, my trusted sword, my shield, my festive garment, an evil demon has taken you from me. My friend, the swift mule, the wild ass of the mountain, the panther of the wilderness. Enkidu, my friend, after we conquered the mountain and killed the bull of heaven, after we defeated Humbabar in the cedar forest, now what is this sleep that has seized you? You have turned dark and do not hear me. But Enkidu's eyes did not move, and his heart no longer beat. Gilgamesh covered his friend's face like a bride, swooping down over him like an eagle, pacing back and forth like a lioness mourning her lost cubs. He sheared off his curls and threw them to the ground, tearing off his finery and casting it away. At dawn, Gilgamesh called out to the land, "Blacksmiths, lapidaries, coppersmiths, goldsmiths, jewelers, create a statue of my friend." They fashioned a statue of Enkidu, his chest of lapis lazuli, his skin of gold. "I had you lie on the great couch, the couch of honor. I let you sit in the seat of ease, so the princes of the world could kiss your feet. I made the people of Uruk mourn and wail for you. I filled happy hearts with sorrow. After you died, I let a filthy mat of hair grow over my body and donned a lion's skin, roaming the wilderness." As dawn broke, Gilgamesh opened his straps and brought out a large table of sisu wood. He filled a carnelian bowl with honey and a lapis lazuli bowl with butter, offering them to Shamash. Gilgamesh cried bitterly, roaming the wilderness, "I'm going to die too, just like Enkidu. This deep sadness fills me, and I fear death, so I wander the wilderness, determined to find Utnapishtim, the son of Uba-Tutu. I must hurry." When night fell and he reached the mountain passes, he saw lions and was terrified. He raised his head in prayer to Sin, the moon god, pleading, "Save me!" Sleeping that night, he was jolted awake by a dream. In it, he saw a warrior enjoying life, holding an axe and a dagger. The warrior fell into their midst like an arrow, scattering them. Gilgamesh continued his journey, determined. He reached Mount Mashu, which daily guards the rising and setting of the sun. The mountain's peaks touched the sky, and its roots plunged into the netherworld. Scorpion beings guarded its gates, inspiring trembling terror. Just seeing them was enough to invoke the fear of death. When Gilgamesh saw them, he trembled but summoned his courage and approached. The male scorpion called out to his female, "This one has the flesh of gods." She replied, "He's two-thirds god and one-third human." The male scorpion being then addressed Gilgamesh. "Why have you travelled so far? Why come here, crossing such dangerous rivers? What is your quest?" "I seek my ancestor Utnapishtim," Gilgamesh replied, "the one who joined the assembly of the gods and gained eternal life. I need to ask him about life and death." The scorpion being responded, "No mortal has ever done this. No one has crossed these mountains. For 12 leagues, the path is pure darkness. There is no light." Gilgamesh insisted, "Though it be in deep sadness and pain, in cold or heat, gasping for breath, I will go on. Open the gate." The scorpion being relented, "Go on, Gilgamesh. Fear not. I grant you passage through the Mashu Mountains. May your journey be safe." Encouraged, Gilgamesh began his journey along the road of the sun. He travelled 1 league, enveloped in dense darkness with no light. He couldn't see what lay ahead or behind. 2 leagues, 3 leagues, 4 leagues, still darkness. He pressed on, crying out, but there was no light. At 9 leagues, the north wind licked his face. Still, he could see nothing. After 11 leagues, he saw a faint light. After 12 leagues, he emerged into brilliant light. He found himself in a garden, lush and vibrant, with trees bearing gemstones, lapis lazuli leaves, fruits like jewels, a sight of incredible beauty. Gilgamesh kept walking, raising his eyes to take in this wondrous place. Siduri, the tavern keeper who lived by the seashore, had a golden pot stand and a fermenting vat. Covered with a veil, she saw a figure in the distance. Gilgamesh was wandering, wearing animal skins, his body carrying the flesh of the gods, but with deep sadness etched on his face. He looked like someone who had travelled far and suffered much. Siduri, puzzled and wary, thought, "This guy must be a murderer. Where is he heading?" As soon as she saw him, she bolted her door, locked her gate, and secured the lock. Hearing the noise, Gilgamesh looked up and saw her. "Tavern keeper," Gilgamesh called out, "why have you locked your door, bolted your gate, and secured the lock? If you don't let me in, I'll break down the door and smash the lock." Siduri, the tavern keeper by the seashore, saw the desperation in his eyes and asked, "Who are you?" "I am Gilgamesh," he replied. "I killed the guardian. I destroyed Humbabar in the cedar forest. I fought lions in the mountain passes and grappled with the bull of heaven. I killed them all." Siduri, still cautious, said, "If you are Gilgamesh, why do you look so haggard? Why are your cheeks sunken, your expression so desolate? Why is there such sadness deep within you? Why do you look like someone who has been travelling a long distance, with your face seared by ice and heat? Why do you roam the wilderness?" Gilgamesh, with a heavy heart, responded, "Tavern keeper, shouldn't my cheeks be sunken? Shouldn't my heart be wretched and my features haggard? Shouldn't there be sadness within me? I've travelled far, and the wilderness has taken its toll on me. My friend Enkidu, the wild ass of the mountain, the panther of the wilderness, we went up the mountains together. We killed the bull of heaven and destroyed Humbabar. But now Enkidu is dead. The fate of mankind has overtaken him. For 6 days and 7 nights, I mourned him until a maggot fell out of his nose. His death terrified me. Now I fear death and roam the wilderness. How can I stay silent or be still? My friend, whom I love, has turned to clay. Am I not like him? Will I also lie down, never to get up again?" Gilgamesh continued, "So now, tavern keeper, tell me the way to Utnapishtim. What are the markers? If possible, I will cross the sea. If not, I will continue to roam the wilderness." Siduri replied, "There has never been a passage across the sea. Only Shamash, the sun god, can cross it. The crossing is dangerous, and between here and there are the waters of death. Even if you cross the sea, what will you do when you reach those deadly waters? But over there is Ur-Shanabi, the ferryman of Utnapishtim. Go to him, he might help you." When Gilgamesh heard this, he picked up his axe and dagger and stealthily approached the woods where Ur-Shanabi was. He moved like an arrow among the trees. Ur-Shanabi, the sharp-eyed ferryman, heard the commotion and came running. Seeing Gilgamesh, he struck his head in frustration and clapped his hands to his chest. "Why are your cheeks sunken, your expression so desolate?" Ur-Shanabi asked. "Why is your heart so wretched, your features so haggard? Why do you look like someone who has travelled far and had their face seared by ice and heat? Why do you roam the wilderness?" Gilgamesh replied, "Ur-Shanabi, shouldn't my cheeks be sunken, my heart wretched, and my features haggard? Shouldn't there be sadness within me? My friend Enkidu, the wild ass of the mountain, the panther of the wilderness, is dead. We fought together, but now he has turned to clay. How can I stay silent or be still? Am I not like him? Will I lie down, never to get up again?" Gilgamesh continued, "Tell me the way to Utnapishtim. What are the markers? If possible, I will cross the sea. If not, I will continue to roam the wilderness." Ur-Shanabi said, "Gilgamesh, your actions have made the crossing more difficult. You've smashed the stone things and pulled out their retaining ropes. Without them, the crossing is dangerous. Take the axe in your hand, go into the woods, and cut 300 punting poles, each 60 cubits long. Strip them and attach caps, then bring them to the boat." Gilgamesh followed Ur-Shanabi's instructions. He took up the axe, drew his dagger, went into the woods, and cut 300 punting poles. He stripped them, attached caps, and brought them to the boat. Together they boarded the boat and Gilgamesh launched it. By the third day they reached the waters of death. "Hold back, Gilgamesh," Ur-Shanabi said. "Take a punting pole, but don't let your hand touch the waters of death. Use each pole carefully." Gilgamesh followed his instructions, using the punting poles one by one. As they crossed, he used all the poles and then used his garment as a sail. Utnapishtim saw them approaching and wondered, "Why are the stone things smashed? Who is this stranger? He is not one of mine." When Gilgamesh finally arrived, Utnapishtim asked, "Why are your cheeks sunken, your expression so desolate? Why is your heart so wretched, your features so haggard? Why do you look like someone who has travelled far and had their face seared by ice and heat? Why do you roam the wilderness?" Gilgamesh replied, "Shouldn't my cheeks be sunken and my heart wretched? Shouldn't there be sadness within me? My friend, Enkidu, the panther of the wilderness, is dead. We fought together, but now he has turned to clay. How can I stay silent or be still? Am I not like him? Will I lie down, never to get up again?" Gilgamesh continued, "I have come to see you, Utnapishtim, whom they call the Faraway. I have traversed treacherous mountains and crossed seas. I have not rested, and my muscles ache. I killed wild beasts and wore their skins. I need to know the secret of life and death." Utnapishtim said, "Gilgamesh, why do you chase sadness? You are part god and part man. Have you ever paused to understand the nature of life? The gods made us to experience life and death. We build houses, seal documents, share inheritances, and deal with jealousy. But in the end, death comes to us all. No one can see or hear death, yet it is always there. How long can we build, seal, and share before death comes for us? The gods established life and death, but did not reveal the time of death." Gilgamesh listened, the weight of his journey settling on him, as he stood before Utnapishtim, seeking the wisdom of the ages. Gilgamesh looked at Utnapishtim, the Faraway, and said, "I've been staring at you, and you're just like me. There's nothing strange about you. I was ready to fight you, but now I feel helpless. How did you join the assembly of the gods and gain eternal life?" Utnapishtim replied, "Gilgamesh, I'll share a secret of the gods with you. You know Shurupak, the ancient city on the Euphrates. The gods decided to bring a flood upon it. Anu, their father, made an oath of secrecy. Valiant Enlil was their advisor, Ninurta their chamberlain, and Anugi, their minister of canals. Ea, the clever prince, shared their plan with a reed house. Reed house, reed house, wall, wall. Listen, man of Shurupak, son of Ubartutu, tear down your house and build a boat. Abandon your possessions and save your life. Take all living beings onto the boat. Make it equal in length and width. Roof it over like the Apsu." I understood and asked Ea, "My lord, what should I tell the city, the people, and the elders?" Ea instructed me, "Tell them Enlil has rejected you, so you can't live in the city or on his land. Say you'll go down to the Apsu to live with me. He will rain abundance on you, fowl, fish, and a harvest of wealth. In the morning, loaves of bread will shower down, and in the evening, a rain of wheat." At dawn, the people gathered around me. The carpenter brought his hatchet, the reed worker his stone, and even the children carried pitch. On the fifth day, I laid out the boat's exterior. Its walls were 12 cubits high, and its sides were equal. I divided it into 7 levels and 9 compartments, sealing the middle with plugs to keep out water. I gathered everything necessary, raw bitumen, pitch, and oil. I butchered oxen and sheep daily, giving the workers ale, beer, oil, and wine, so they could feast like it was a festival. By sunset, the boat was finished. Launching it was difficult, but eventually 2/3 of it was in the water. I loaded everything I had: silver, gold, living beings, my family, animals, and craftsmen. Shamash set a time. In the morning, loaves of bread will shower down, and in the evening, a rain of wheat. Go inside the boat and seal the entry. At dawn, a black cloud rose from the horizon. Adad rumbled within it, and heralds Shulat and Hanish went ahead. The Anunnaki gods lifted their torches, setting the land ablaze. Adad's deeds stunned the heavens, turning light to darkness. The flood shattered the land like a pot. All day the south wind blew, submerging the mountains and overwhelming the people. No one could see their neighbor. They couldn't recognize each other in the torrent. The gods were terrified and ascended to the heavens, cowering like dogs by the outer wall. Ishtar shrieked like a woman in childbirth, lamenting the catastrophe she had ordered. The Anunnaki gods wept with her, their lips parched with thirst. For 6 days and nights, the storm and flood flattened the land. On the 7th day, the storm calmed, and the sea fell still. I looked out, and all human beings had turned to clay. The land was flat as a roof. I opened a vent and fresh air hit my face. I wept, tears streaming down. I looked for land and saw a region at 12 leagues. The boat lodged on Mount Nimush, held firm for 6 days. On the 7th day, I released a dove, but it returned with no place to perch. I sent a swallow, but it too came back. Then I sent a raven. It didn't return, having found land. I released all the animals and made a sacrifice. The gods smelled the sweet incense and gathered like flies. Bellatili lifted the lapis lazuli necklace that Anu had made, vowing never to forget the days of the flood. The gods came to the offering, but Enlil was forbidden because he had brought the flood. When Enlil arrived, he saw the boat and was furious. He asked how a living being had escaped. Ninurta blamed Ea, who then defended himself, saying he only revealed the secret in a dream. Enlil then entered the boat and blessed me and my wife, making us like gods and settling us far away at the mouth of the rivers. Gilgamesh, no one can convene the gods for you. If you seek eternal life, you must not sleep for 6 days and 7 nights. As soon as Gilgamesh sat down, sleep overcame him. Utnapishtim pointed out the irony to his wife. Look at him, the man who wanted eternal life, asleep like any other. Utnapishtim's wife baked loaves and placed them by Gilgamesh's head, marking each day on the wall. When he finally awoke, Utnapishtim showed him the loaves, each representing a day he slept. Gilgamesh was dismayed. Death has taken hold of me. Wherever I go, it follows. What shall I do now, Utnapishtim? Utnapishtim instructed Ushanabi, take Gilgamesh to the washing place. Let him wash his matted hair, cast off his animal skin, and be anointed with oil. Dress him in royal robes so he looks the king he is. Ushanabi took Gilgamesh to the washing place. Gilgamesh washed, cast off his skins, and dressed in royal robes. Together they sailed back to Uruk. Utnapishtim's wife said, Gilgamesh came here exhausted and worn out. What can you give him so he can return home with honor? Utnapishtim then revealed a secret. There is a plant that grows like a box thorn. It will prick your hands, but if you obtain it, you will regain your youth. Gilgamesh followed Utnapishtim's instructions, retrieved the plant, and decided to test it on an old man in Uruk. On their journey back, Gilgamesh stopped to bathe in a cool spring. A snake, smelling the plant's fragrance, silently stole it and shed its skin as it slithered away. Gilgamesh sat down and wept. For whom have I labored? For whom have I journeyed? I haven't secured anything for myself, but only benefited the snake. At 20 leagues, they broke for food. At 30 leagues, they stopped for the night. They finally arrived in Uruk. Gilgamesh said to Ushanabi, go up, Ushanabi, onto the walls of Uruk. Inspect its foundation, its brickwork. Isn't it built with kiln-fired brick laid out by the 7 sages? 1 league of city, 1 league of gardens, 1 league of lowlands, the temple of Ishtar, and 3 leagues of open area. This is Uruk.